wrong side of the pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I am Jeremy Lance. We're just trucking along here in the hot burning summer with soccer going, and yet at the same time, I feel like it's all about to end.
Yeah, we're racing towards the end of the cliff. We're like Bonnie and Clyde a little bit at the moment, just hanging on to this wild last ride of crazy pandemic era soccer where there are no fans and there are giant hovering advertisement boards, and we're seeing cardboard cutouts of people, and you know, that's all ending right now, and it feels like that this circus of a situation is coming to an end, and we're just trying to enjoy the last fleeting moments of it.
Yeah, it's wild that it's coming and going so quickly. What do you think we're going to look back? Obviously, there's so many ways to look at how we are going to look back at this moment, not just in sports, but just in life. But like you mentioned the giant advertising boards and the no fans and the, horribly named tournament in Orlando, all those things. Like in 5 years' time, when we look back at what was soccer in 2020 and all of the oddities that it was, like, is it going to be one of those things that we look back and we're like, man, that was just some weird times. What a wild ride. Are we going to look back and be like, yeah, it was pretty, like, why did we do that? Like that. I mean, I'm glad we were entertained for like those couple of weeks, but like, eh, like, is it going to be a season that, because of the way it is going to become such an afterthought in the long run? Or is it always going to have like this special weird season vibe to it?
I don't know. I mean, we'll never have the luxury of the hindsight that we'll eventually end up getting and developing in this particular sense. But I'm kind of loving the quirkiness of this. I love how like they like threw it all together, and it's very clearly like, there was a lot of thinking and thought process on it. And, you know, we kind of ballyhooed and made a fuss about whether or not they should be doing this tournament in the first place. And it kind of seems, now that they've kicked Dallas and Nashville out of this equation, that they've gotten things under control. They've not seen any more, you know, breaks in the bubble. They've contained themselves well, and they're kind of just doing the best they can in the circumstances. And I think it's a safer method than all the teams that we're seeing in MLB and NFL that are getting ready to travel the country here in the coming months, or at least that's what they're planning to do for their league. I think this makes more sense right now.
One country though, because Canada just told Major League Baseball to take off, eh?
Yeah, like
Toronto Blue Jays can't even play in Toronto.
Baseball's slowly been withdrawing its Major League presence in Canada for a while now, so it's not necessarily something I'm overly surprised about that they're saying, hey, get out of here. We've got our own national sport. We're going to put them all in Toronto anyway, so take that. But I think because every sport's going through this, I think everyone's going to kind of look back at this time and be like, God damn, like that was a weird thing that we did there for a while, like no sports and then sports on hyperdrive for a little while and like everyone making up rules on the fly. Like, I think we're all going to kind of, you know, all these sports are going to be write-off seasons, but we're all going to kind of lovingly look back at this in certain circumstances and be like, hey, remember that time when we did this and it was just nuts?
I feel like this is setting up just the way that the sports world has tried to continue through this moment, has set itself up for like multiple 30 for 30 documentaries. Like, there might need to be a whole series on just how each sport tackled this situation and just the goofiness and weirdness that was some of the ways that they went about it.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to do like a season of it where they just go through one sport after another like on this week's 30 for 30 COVID special, we're going to look back at how the pandemic impacted the NBA or MLS or whatever the leagues might be. And, you know, in 5 years, hopefully we'll have enough perspective to judge these decisions that we've made accordingly. You know, let's hope that everything develops in the direction that we want it to, so that this situation doesn't become worse than it actually currently is. Not that I think that's necessarily something that's likely to come true, but you know, right now we can't rule anything out because we just aren't there yet. So I'm hopeful that we look back at this as a situation that was like, we made the best of a bad set of circumstances. And you know, if nothing else, we had some soccer to watch during lockdowns and
during the
home orders and
times
and being laid off or whatever else is going on in your life.
Fantasy.
Yeah. So let's start by saying that I thought the MLS Fantasy League is back. It is not. So we keep talking about, this counts towards the regular season. They are not counting these towards regular season games in there. So MLS Fantasy Boss, you are holding onto your spot by virtue of the fact that you were there when this all ended. So no real update on the MLS side, but over into the Premier League, there really are not any updates there either. Mike DiPietro, 15 straight shows on top. I mean, it's like 3 monthly wins that he's got there. I owe him some wristbands for sure. You and I both improved places, though. Fifth, I'm up 5 to 63. You're up 3 to 96. So, hey, positive news, if nothing, for a mostly lackluster fantasy update.
The top 4 in the Premier League, I think, is where we'll start things. Still super tight, still super undecided. Obviously the top 2 spots decided, but who is finishing 3rd? Who is finishing 4th? Who is, obviously not getting a Champions League spot thanks to Manchester City somehow wiggling free? We still don't know. So like, what has happened since we last talked really was not a ton. Leicester City played a match. They lost that match. They lost the match to Spurs.
That's
so
right.
Talk about your side actually winning a match. And by the way, congratulations to no St. Tottenham's Day, which was made official today.
Yeah, I tweeted about this just before we started recording. And it's natural for me to hate this day, but I hate – they're like Spurs fans who are really kind of celebrating that there's no St. Tottenham's Day, and it kind of like gives that day the power that Arsenal fans want it to have, which is like making it into being something. And I think it's just such a non-lofty goal. Like it's kind of like it's a – easily obtainable goal if your team is competent, right? And you know, I'm not saying Spurs are at their most competent at the moment, but Arsenal have certainly not been at their most competent for a while now. And I just think it's a low bar to try to eclipse. And so I hate it. That's a bit of a tangent that I'm taking here. We looked good for a change. Harry Kane with a brace. And looking back to his old self, probably just in time to try to force a move out this summer. Leicester just continuing to drop like a fly. They had that huge gap. We've talked about this over and over since the pandemic restart has happened. And now they find themselves with just a match to play against a team that's right in the thick of the hunt in it, that has 2 matches to play. And if I'm looking at things and evaluating other matches that all these teams have to play that are left, both your Chelsea and Manchester United, these are the only 2 sides that are really still in contention for these Champions League places. I feel like Leicester are going to find themselves sitting on the outside. And that seems so odd given how secure they seemed just a few months ago.
Yeah, it's wild to see that. It's possible, right? So they only have 1 match left. Leicester City will play United to finish the season. That's their 1 remaining game. United and Chelsea both will be playing here in the midweek. Chelsea playing the accomplice to Liverpool lifting the trophy on Wednesday, as they will do that. So they have that match. United plays, what was it, Villa, West Ham, someone?
They play West Ham. They finish at Leicester City. So, I mean, you look at these matches, they've got the easier – well, not, they've got more points available to them. So if they win one and take a single point in one of the other ones, it's all but wrapped up, not to mention if they win them both. So I look at this more and, yeah, Chelsea have Liverpool and Wolves to deal with, but – you guys have that extra point margin there. You figured you'll probably get at least a point out of one of those two games. I feel fairly confident in saying that Leicester City will be sitting on the outside looking in when this is all said and done.
I'm glad you're confident. I don't know. I see Chelsea's staring down two matches where they need to get probably something. I don't know. I mean, yeah, all logic says Manchester United continues the form that they were in, at least in the league. We'll ignore, at least for the moment, what happened at the weekend. We'll stay in their form and we'll take care of business against Leicester City. And then at that point, Chelsea can sit there and lose 100-0 in both of these final matches and it won't matter. But I don't know. That's just, it's leaving too much to chance. You're anytime it's not entirely in your grasp, right?
Yeah.
And you have to kind of, to an extent, bank on something else also happening. It's nervy. And I feel we're recording on Tuesday night. I feel as much as Liverpool are kind of, you know, they've taken their foot off the gas. I think they'll be a little more up for it since it's the day that they're also going to lift the trophy. So I feel like they're probably going to attempt to lift that trophy at the end of a win instead of an end of some lackluster performance. But I think that is going to be a very tough match. And listen, Wolves will most likely still be battling it out for a Europa spot. Come the final championship Sunday. So yeah, I think it's – I don't know. I'm always glass half empty about this stuff. So I'm super worried about Chelsea hanging on, especially if they lose Wednesday and they go in to Sunday where there's just a lot more pressure to perform against Wolves. I'm a little worried about that. But you're right. United can really – if all they have to do is win this match on Sunday – and they should. That's what everyone thinks they're going to do. This Leicester City side is completely cratering. They're brodging the hell out of this thing. But I don't know. I'm a little worried. But we shall see. Let's jump down to the other end of the table. We lost another one. Bournemouth. We officially lost Bournemouth. They're gone.
What a run this club had, and it's supremely sad to see the Cherries go down. I think they won a lot of neutral hearts over the years during this incredible run that they had under Eddie Howe's stewardship up this table climb that they completed. And you have to think he basically helped raise this club out of ruin, helped push them beyond the bounds of what was expected of them, and they punched well above their weight in the Premier League for a long, long time. I think if you'd said to anyone 5 or 10 years ago, does a player, or does a club like this deserve to be in this position? And of course the answer would be like, no. Think how many clubs of that size languish in the Championship and League One and even League Two. And they were by far the smallest top flight team in any of the top leagues, I think, for most of Europe over the last 5 years. And that's just that's a lot of weight for them to carry.
Yeah, I mean, they've been up for how many years now? What, 4 or 5 seasons? And it's crazy. On the flip side of that, a big club like Sunderland is going to be spending their third straight year in the lower leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're right. Like, deserving is kind of a hard one to kind of pinpoint in a way, right?
Yeah.
It's frustrating to see them go. I do want to point out, and I guess we can kind of, you know, next week we'll do our usual eulogizing of everyone's seasons. But, you know, yeah, for Bournemouth, they're going to go down, and they have a lot of what I would still consider Premier League caliber talent. And it's the question we have to ask about any team that does this every year. But they have a lot of good players and a manager that I think a lot of people in the Premier League think, they could probably still get a spot up here. You know, your Nathan Ake, your Joshua King, your Callum Wilson, again, Eddie Howe. I feel like Eddie Howe is the first, his name's going to pop up. If it doesn't in this brief offseason that we're going to have, his is going to be that first name to pop up as soon as someone's on the verge of getting sacked.
Oh, I mean, I think he now becomes the odds on favorite for all the betting agencies. Whenever a Premier League level job opens up, he might very well, you know, think of a club like Watford, who, if they manage to survive here, and we'll talk more about them here in a moment, but they've just fired Nigel Pearson, you know, yeah, inexplicably, despite the fact that they're not even mathematically safe yet. And, you know, that maybe if they survive the drop this year, Eddie Howe's the guy they give a call to, and suddenly we find him back in the Premier League again.
Yeah, I'm looking over the table right now and just kind of like who could possibly be that side. You know, you look at a club like Newcastle, that's always a shoddy situation with their managers. That seems like that's always on the verge of changing. West Ham? I mean, sure, David Moyes is going to keep them up, but, like, realistically, how much longer do they actually want him around?
Right.
So if you're a West Ham and you can get an Eddie Howe and kick old grizzle face to the curb, like, you're probably going to do it, right?
I wish the listeners could see how big your smile is anytime you talk about David Moyes getting fired. He's not even for your club. He's never coached your club at all.
He's done nothing to me. He has never the only, I mean, he's actually done good things, like be the first manager to start this long running or it was a long running descent of Manchester United. I mean, that's a positive in my book. He's not done anything against me. And yet I do just kind of laugh at what his career has become.
Mortal enemy indeed. Aston Villa just doing their damnedest to not go down. After we watch Arsenal peg back Liverpool and deny Liverpool the ability to break Manchester City's 100-point barrier record, by the way. But then they turn around and lose to Villa. And Villa have just sprung to life over the last few matches, getting big result after big result. And they now find themselves in a situation where they can pretty much control their own destiny. Much like you want to do at the top of the table, they're getting that opportunity at the bottom of the table. And, you know, they right now, as things currently stand, if the Premier League ends today, they get to stay up. And, you know, they've got a match left to play. But
they play Villa, which is kind of an interesting one, who at the moment is safe. But, you know, I mean, obviously it's a chance for both of those teams to completely solidify their passage to the Premier League for the next season. So that'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we'll have.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Watford. So Watford gets smacked today by Manchester City, and Villa goes and holds off a once again very inconsistent Arsenal side and gets a win. And now you have a situation where Watford, at the moment, as it stands, as it goes into Championship Sunday for those two sides trying to hang on and trying to get themselves out of relegation, Watford is currently in 18th based off of one goal in the goal differential department.
Narrow margins.
Very narrow. It did not help that they went out and got rolled, what, 4-0 today?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I was talking to someone today. It's like, you know, you kind of get, even like clubs you don't really like or don't care about, like you get oddly attached to like them just being a part of the Premier League. And I feel like we are on the verge of almost certainly losing two of those. Like we lost Bournemouth. That's a team that we thought, I mean, they had kind of made themselves a mainstay over these past several seasons. Now we're going to lose Watford most likely. That's another team that had kind of may establish themselves to an extent over the past several seasons. You know, Villa obviously has been up and down, but you know, they've been down for just that little bit. And other than that had always been up. So they're an established side. West Ham, another side that has throughout the history kind of yo-yoed occasionally. But you know, it's weird. It's weird sometimes when you're like, oh crap, we're actually like, these teams are not a factor. Like remember Stoke? Do you remember Stoke?
I mean, you remember Stoke? Do you remember Wigan? Do you remember Portsmouth? Right, like
Blackpool. Some of these
clubs that were mainstays for a while, you know, that we got so used to seeing on a regular basis have almost vanished, not only out of the Premier League, but almost out of existence in some of these cases. So that's the peril that a lot of these clubs are facing when they go down. Like I'm genuinely worried about Bournemouth. Like if they can't shed a lot of their contracts right now that they had to sign to be competitive in the Premier League, it leaves them in a terrible spot, especially given that they don't have match day revenues that are as large as some of the other clubs, even in that league. And that's the situation that you look at. You get so comfortable with these teams being around for a while, but then you think about it, like Leeds hasn't been back for 16 years and suddenly now they're back. And I'll talk more about them later in the show, but it's just it's a tough world out there.
Yeah, you're kind of in a situation for, you know, like if you take it to Bournemouth, they need to shed salary. They have a small stadium, so match day revenue is not what it is for everyone else. And we still don't know how long it'll be even be into the season until there'll actually be fans in the stands spending money in that stadium, buying tickets. Like conventional wisdom says that's probably not happening for the first half of the season, right?
You would think.
I mean, that's
evaluating best case scenarios right now. And, you know, if you look in this country, we're showing worst case scenarios right now, right? Where things have been allowed to spiral unchecked, essentially. Whereas in Europe, we're seeing some more stringent, maybe some more community aspect to their culture that have helped clamp things down. And maybe they'll get things a little bit more back to normal sooner than what we have. Not that England are tremendously better than we are in some respects either, but we don't know yet. Like that's the difficult part yet, as we're like aiming for a future that we don't even know is guaranteed at this point.
So, yeah, I mean, the future is not guaranteed, and the revenue situation for next year, especially for those who are finding themselves on the outside looking in and getting none of that sweet Premier League TV money, a lot of that's uncertain. Let's go ahead and whip around the league. I don't know if there's certain matches you wanted to start with.
I mean, the only thing that I wanted to celebrate was just the fact that Harry Kane has proven that he can score in a Mourinho system, but also classic Spurs only coming to life when it no longer really matters, given that they are now officially out of the Premier League. The Champions League. But it is good and hopeful, like, if he's happy and scoring goals, I think he's far less likely to leave the team this summer. But I'm not ruling anything out at this point.
But does not having Champions League play into the other aspect of that, the other side of that coin?
Well, if Manchester United miss out on the top four, then I'll feel a lot more comfortable about things. We'll just say that much.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Let's quickly hit FA Cup real quick. I don't think I put it in a rundown, but I guess we should really mention that.
I'm not prepared, but you guys are going to get a crack.
So there was two matches. Arsenal, on the backs of a absolute shift by Czech's notes, David Luiz had himself a shift.
Yeah.
Which I did point out to someone the other day, like, if there's ever going to be, like, when you want David Luiz to put in a shift, I remember when he was at Chelsea, it generally was cup matches. Like, he put in his better performances in cup competitions. I think of, like, the Europa semifinal last year where he helped save us by biking a ball off the line. So they advance over current holders in City.
Mm-hmm.
And they will face a Chelsea side who kind of, like, out of nowhere manhandled a Manchester United side that, as of yet, had pretty much, I mean, this season, they had dominated Chelsea. They had dominated Frank Lampard's side in the three attempts that they previously had. And you, obviously, it all starts with that 4-0 win on opening day of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also dumped them out of the League Cup. Chelsea just kind of shredded them. I don't know if they just weren't up for it. De Gea had himself a nightmare, which was great. But they get through. So Lampard's got a chance to win a trophy in his first year. Arteta in the same position. One of those new managers and former players of those sides will be lifting a trophy next Sunday.
I wish there was a way that both of you could lose. That would be ideal.
Listen, I don't know if you're not getting this, but it's all about having these former players manage your side. So my question is, who would be that former player that needs to come in and do a job for Spurs?
Oh, man. I mean, so many to pick from. Berbatov could come over and share cigarettes with certain coaches on the sidelines. Maybe we'll bring back, Robbie Keane. He'll do some cool somersaults for us.
That's worth something right there.
Yeah, right? Like, I'm pretty sure he's in football management now, too. So sign him up, Daniel. That's what we need at this point.
Would you take a Klinsmann?
No.
Okay. I was just trying to think of, like, other, like, actual, like, you know, guys with managerial pedigrees that have called our Spurs home. And that was kind of the first thing to bubble up in my mind there.
Yeah, I think that ship probably sailed on him about 10 years ago after he wasn't, you know, ceremoniously dumped out of the last few positions he's held.
Eh. Managers only hired to be fired, right?
I think so. That's what they tell us anyway, right?
So, yeah, it'll be the big final at Wembley in front of nobody next Sunday. So excited stuff there. Cannot. I wish Rinehouse was open because I wouldn't show up for the match because I don't like watching matches like that where there's just so much on the line, like around people. I just get a little anxious. But I would like the second that match was over, I would try to like get in my car and make a beeline to Rinehouse. And then I would take that fake FA Cup trophy that the Cincy Gooners have and punt it into the street and hopefully let the streetcar run it over.
Oh man, that'd be incredible if the streetcar ran it over. We would have to get that on some social media.
I mean, hey, no one would be hurt because the streetcar is operating empty, I believe, still.
Makes sense.
So it's a victimless crime. Let's go stateside. MLS is back.
Still.
We now are starting to get the teams that are in, teams that are out. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the good news. Orlando and Philly, you have advanced. San Jose, Portland, and Columbus also advanced as of this moment. Obviously, still a handful of third round matches to take place, but that's where we stand. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on the teams so far that have made it in? Obviously, some surprises in there. Orlando being a surprise. San Jose, it looks like they, at least in a three-match situation, had kind of figured things out. And then, you know, you're like a team like Columbus that, like, they look like the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, they won all three of their matches. They're plus seven. What is it? Plus seven. Plus six on the wins when it comes to goal differential. Like, they easily look the best team, if not just in the league overall, at least in the East at the moment. Contrast that with Atlanta United, a team that some pundits were, I think, mistakenly giving a lot of, you know, praise to before this all restarted. And they've shown their current situation minus, you know, Joseph Martinez and you know, a lot of other players who have left the organization, kind of shown themselves to be a little bit of a train wreck. And, you know, they crash out of the tournament winless and goalless in all three of their matches in a group that contained FC Cincinnati, who managed to beat them despite them having nine men.
Yeah, that's, we had them right where we want them, two players down. It's weird. I don't know. I mean, part of me looks at Atlanta, though, like, and I don't know if this is just me trying to be nice to them, but, like, part of me looks at the Atlanta situation and is like, didn't this kind of happen last year? Like, they had a really crappy start last season.
Yeah, and then they got
the playoffs and they made the run.
Yeah, and they certainly, you know, got their feet underneath them. And maybe DeBoer's sides have a tendency to start slow, but he's certainly the one receiving a lot of the attention at the moment, at least, from all the you know, armchair analysts out there to all the actual analysts out there. And, you know, you mentioned that Orlando went through. And we're talking about Atlanta crashing out. And you look at the job that Oscar Pereja has done with the squad that he has at his disposal, a team that's more or less unchanged from last year, and they were complete garbage, to this Atlanta side who, despite, you know, missing Joseph, still have a number of fantastic players in their roster, enough to turn, you know, national team heads for more than a few federations. And, you know, they can't get that done under DeBoer. And you have to kind of go, like, well, what's the difference here? You know, one guy getting more out of a lesser group and another guy getting less out of a greater group. And it's just, it seems like there's trouble in paradise, at least as far as Atlanta is concerned.
Yeah, definitely some issues there for Atlanta. So Atlanta is one of only two teams that at the moment on Tuesday night are officially out of this tournament. The other team, and I think the team that finally everybody is coming to a sad realization on, at least for their current makeup, Inter-Miami is like a low-key dumpster fire.
Yeah, and look, they're the first MLS team to ever go winless in their first five matches. That's mega concerning.
Yeah. They also only scored 3 goals in those 5 matches.
I mean, to be fair, that's like probably 3 more goals than what Atlanta have scored, at least over their last 3 matches. And, I think you look at this team and you go, wow, they've got a big uphill battle for sure. And they've got, you know, history to fight off, at least how they're starting. But they also were really close in a few of these games. So 3 of those losses were by less than a goal. They've got a number of clean sheets in here already as well. Like, I think if you appropriately adjust this team, and I'm not fully certain what those solutions are right now, but I think it can perform better than what it is. The pieces that they have are not giving us a sum that's at least equal to them. And I definitely think that's, you know, the way they need to approach it.
Yeah, I mean, here's my issue with them, not just really the on-field product, but like the club on the whole, is like, I feel like MLS and their ownership have really been beating the drum about like Inter-Miami is going to be this like basically like LAFC, like the next LAFC. Like, they're going to be this glamour club in the league that's going to get all these big signings. And they're going to be this fun, attractive side that gets, you know, international attention and is just flashy and is kind of the one of the new faces of the league. And so far, there's been nothing to make you go, oh, yeah, that's totally happened. I mean, this is a club that has basically been on paper, an organization for how many years now? And they still couldn't. It wasn't enough time for them to figure out like a shirt sponsor. Like, that's alarming. That's kind of alarming to me.
There are a lot of things that are in that group. Like, you talk about shirt sponsor. It's inconceivable that in a town like Miami, that you can't nail down at least some paltry $1 million shirt deal for your first season.
I mean, there's got to be some gelato company in South Beach that would just do it for a couple thousand.
Yeah, I mean, at bare minimum, right? But it's also like they have a USL championship team that they were supposed to field this year, and I think they ended up being able to back out of it thanks to COVID. But
an easy excuse.
Yeah, right? But they didn't, like, have a team constructed up until, like, a week before the season. And even if that, I think maybe it was, like, a couple days before the season started, before they even had a full 11. And you know, that stems all the way up to other technical issues that they had where, you know, I think they had a bunch of really big name targets on their list for a manager. And because it took them so long to whittle down that list, they didn't move on anything else like roster construction or, you know, getting some of the other front facing technical side things set up that they need to have set up. So they've continued to find just ways to not do anything correctly.
Yeah. It's, I think, and obviously I hope just for the growth of the league that like they get it sorted out. But like, I feel like this is once again, one of those situations where everyone just assumed, oh yeah, this is totally going to work out just fine. This is a slam dunk. And I think the league thought this was a slam dunk. I think Beckham and his ownership group thought this was a slam dunk. I just feel like this is like a bunch of people going like, this is going to be super awesome. And then like none of the actual effort and thought is put into it.
Well, I mean, they can have all these grandeur plans, but when the team ends up playing in the same damn location as the team that folded up shop 20 years before it, like, you have to kind of wonder, like, well, aren't we repeating some of the mistakes of the past here just in an effort to make sure this team isn't on forever indefinite expansion next list? And, you know, there's got to be some soul searching within MLS's home office at this point. And I think you can say this about some of their other expansion decisions recently as well. And only time will tell with them. But the paintings we're seeing right now are that these markets where we've seen a lot of expansion, they're not necessarily doubling down and producing on the same level that the league kind of thought they were going to, despite maybe some, you know, loud local buy-in.
Yeah, we'll see. So the rest of the group stage will conclude over the next couple of days here, and then we have knockout round and then a championship, and then I talked to two people associated with the league this week. Neither of them seem convinced of any concrete plan of what happens after this tournament.
Yeah, I've also kind of reached out to a few people starting to wonder about what's going to go down there, and the conversations are definitely happening. The progress on those conversations has been very start and stopping. And ultimately, I think the league and these executives who are starting to try to make some of these decisions is they're looking at this and going, man, like, the cases are way higher right now and the infection rates are way higher than they were when the first lockdown happened. Can we really be putting ourselves in a position to start traveling the planet? And, you know, I think what we're going to watch happen is MLS, you know, had the eyes of the sporting world on them for the last few weeks, at least as far as the U.S. is concerned, to see how their bubble withstood its tests and how they handled adversity. And I think they gave everyone some hope that you could do the bubble system in particular markets. But now what MLS is going to do is they're going to watch and see Major League Baseball, who's taken a very different approach, and they're not necessarily going with this bubble concept as tightly as other teams have. Can they make use of that? And, you know, I'm not sure if they can or not, but it's something that I'll be watching pretty closely.
I mean, credit to them, the bubble plan. Obviously, things are still, you know, the bubble's not over yet, but it was a really rocky start. But, like, I have gone, what, like three or four tests phases in a row now with not a single positive.
Yeah.
After a messy start, they've kind of started to prove that, like, the bubble thing can work. You just have to actually do it right, which they found out that they were not at the beginning there.
Yeah.
Didn't have anyone's full cooperation.
Yeah, I mean, and is that MLS's fault, or is it more of the organization's fault for not putting down the hammer? Is it, you know, we don't know.
That's been a big debate, and I'll fight anyone on the fact that I think that it all ultimately is the league's fault, because the league just left too much clubs, right? Like, when you get to show up to Orlando, you know, what you're doing before you go to Orlando. Like, it just seemed like there was just too much gray area given to where teams were all coming in at different times. I've said this before. Why were teams coming in that close to the start of the actual tournament? Should they not have gotten in there and then kind of like bedded down for at least a week?
Well, I think the coaches would have preferred that. The clubs obviously would have preferred that to a certain extent, despite from the added expense standpoint. But more importantly, was the players' union had vetoed coming in earlier because it kept guys away from their families. It kept guys away from home. Kept in an environment that I think most guys would prefer not to be in, you know, all things considered. But, you know, the MLS didn't have control of all the chips to a certain extent.
But shouldn't they have?
Depends on how you want to, I don't know, look at the players union angle, right? Like,
well, I mean, yeah, obviously you have to negotiate things with the players union. I get that part.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like there wasn't, at least from the outsider's point of view, there wasn't enough MLS closely controlling the situation early on. I think they just literally were just hoping like, well, everyone will show up at the bubble and then we'll just, you know, keep them all secure from that point on. And I guess no one thought like, well, hey, what if they're idiots before they show up to the bubble? What if they show up to the bubble and then they're like a total issue because they were not handling themselves properly?
I think the bigger issue, like I hear your point as far as getting down there earlier. I think in an ideal world, every team would have been given enough time to, even if they had infections, they wouldn't have had to leave. They could have just, you know, stayed on their own and allowed it to clear out, and then still participate. But I think the bigger issue is that MLS didn't tighten the rules enough while teams were still in their home markets and put more stringent rules in place in that realm. And then actually send people out to police that to a certain extent and to keep teams honest because, you know, and at least in the situation with Dallas and Nashville, it seems that there wasn't enough priority put on that heading into the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, there's a precedent for that, right? Like, we had in the Premier League, the league was basically deploying narcs, deploying, some Karens out to each training facility to kind of make sure everyone was doing things the right way in the build-up to the restart.
Damn it, Karen.
The one time we needed you to do something. Like, and you weren't. Where were you?
Driving the minivan, you know, doing the soccer mom thing.
Winners and wankers.
I think that's the point in the show that we are at this week. I'm going to go with my winner to kick things off. Leeds United. I got to get it to them. 16-year wait for their return to the Premier League, and we finally see the supporters of the Peacocks get this opportunity to be back in the top flight. One, I think we're going to hear way too many watch the Peacocks on Peacock advertisements next year. Like, I'm already annoyed about that.
And that the advertisement writes itself on that one.
It really does. But conversely, outweighing that is the fact that we're going to get Marcelo Bielsa in the Premier League. I'm mega excited about that. For those of you who aren't familiar with him, he's like a sillier Mourinho, just as likely to pull something crazy off, but without being like a jerk about it. He's just going to be a lot of entertainment for us.
I would say he's still a jerk about it. And he also, I'll also like Mourinho, has no shame in any of it, right?
Oh, no, no.
He does not care what you think about him.
If he shows up the tape recorder, don't let him inside.
Yeah. I would keep an eye out for that. It's super cool that we are getting kind of one of these old, very historic clubs that had such a run at being, you know, we talked earlier in the show about the mainstays, like talk about a club that was a top flight mainstay for so long. Not only top flight, but like an actual like contender.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, some of the best players that we think of today, over the last 10, 15 years in the Premier League had stints at Leeds. And if you look at some of these guys who were there and the success they had in the Premier League, how close they came and a lot of big competitions, including the Champions League. It's fun to see that back. And while it's sad to lose some of these kind of Premier League mainstays like Bournemouth and, potentially Watford or maybe even Villa going back down, right? It's good to see at least a team like Leeds getting their comeback up.
Yeah, no, it'll be exciting to have them in and to have like that. I mean, like a big old fan base back in the top flight. So that'll be that'll add to it. If you're unfamiliar with Leeds, obviously there's a lot of rich history for it. If you want to know about some of their more recent history and get to know them, there's a really good documentary series I've mentioned multiple times on this podcast that you can watch on Amazon Prime called Take Me Home. Yeah, no, super excited. I'm with you there. That was actually, I had contemplated picking that. But instead, I picked Will Ferrell for authoring one of the best, worst halftime interviews ever.
Oh, man.
I don't know how many people saw this. Halftime of El Tráfico, a match that then got away from itself pretty quickly in that second half. Will Ferrell, via Zoom, like everything is these days, joined the broadcast with John Champion and Taylor Twilman. And right away, it was a clunky, awkward, hysterical interview where first he spent the first minute, like, you could see him debating, like, should I take my mask off or leave it on? And then finally he just rips it off. Then he decides to do most of the interview with his the race car helmet from Ricky from Talladega Nights as Ricky Bobby, and wears that. And then all of his children wander into what I assume are his children wander into the frame, eating a bowl of cereal, and like three others were aggressively eating corn on the cob.
Oh man, and it like became the object of transcription for anyone who's watching the broadcast. Like, they were trying to conduct a silly interview with him, and literally everyone just started focusing on the corn. And because Will Ferrell was wearing this giant helmet the whole time, like, he couldn't really hear what was happening. And so it just made for total awkward, I don't know what's happeningness. And it was just fabulous TV viewing.
I know there was a lot of people like, oh, wow, this is a train wreck. Like, no, this is comedy gold. This is amazing.
Will Ferrell at his best.
Your wanker?
My wanker this week, I'm going with the French Football Association for deciding to nix this year's Ballon d'Or prize due to the pandemic.
That's the one.
It's just... I get it. The season was unprecedented. We had some leagues that didn't finish, although let's be honest, it was like two games for the French league that didn't finish. It was like three games for Scotland. No one from...
Yeah, I was going to say, how many people in those leagues were up for this Ballon d'Or?
I mean, was Kylian Mbappe in the equation? I think that's probably, okay, you know, maybe Neymar.
And you didn't have the Euros. So I guess there's that, too.
I mean, they made the argument that it just wouldn't be fair because not everyone got their full season as normal, despite the fact that we never see anyone from Ligue 1 or the Scottish Premiership or anything along those lines winning this award. It just seems like such a farce. Like, the season still happened. Like, there were still loads of games that were played. It wasn't like we got, you know, 10 games into the season and then everyone had to quit. Like, we played like 80% of the season, if not more, in most locations. And then we circled back around and finished most of them too. There's no reason why you can't name a player who's been the best player over the last year, just like we do every year, every season. It's ridiculous to me. And no one's getting screwed here more than Robert Lewandowski, who was just on fire in the form of life in the Bundesliga this year for Bayern Munich.
33 league goals in 30 matches.
You know, that's a decent return.
Yeah. Not too shabby. No, this was mine too. It's just, it just smacks of the unfairness, and they just will just do whatever we want because it's not the exact way we want it. Vibe that the Ballon d'Or is always given off. But the Ballon d'Or to me has slightly become irrelevant because it's been by and large the really just two players even actually in consideration for it. They technically have three always up there, but you know, it's just either going to be Messi or Ronaldo every year. I feel like it also, while those guys, yes, generally have like amazing seasons, I feel like there is some bias as far as which leagues they value production in more than others.
Yeah.
I mean, when was the last time a Premier League player was like serious, like a Premier League goal scorer was seriously considered for the Ballon d'Or? It's been a few seasons, right?
Well, I mean, Luka Modric is probably the easiest example. Back when Croatia made their run to the World Cup final a few years ago.
What league was he playing in?
He's playing in La Liga. So
one of two leagues they care about.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not an attacker. And then, you know, outside of that, Fabio Cannavaro won. Back when Italy won the World Cup, and he was with Juve for most of the voting year for that, though he was with Real Madrid when he actually was awarded it. So you're looking back.
And how many years ago was that?
Yeah, 10 years since we've seen anyone outside of the Premier League or, you know, basically La Liga win the award.
Yeah, the award sucks, and they just proved themselves to be a sham by this move.
Fair enough. Burn it down, French football. Never bring it back. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. As always, if you want to get a hold of us, Jeremy's at Jeremy Lance on Twitter. I'm at Wrong Side of Pond. We are nearly there. So we're going to start putting out the invite now. If you have a eulogy for your club season that you would like to share, get a hold of us. Shoot it to wrongsideofthepond@gmail.com, or you can shoot it to us via DMs, whatever works best for you on your favorite social media network. That's cool too. But we'd love to hear your eulogies so we can share those in our upcoming end of the season podcast, so that we can take our 2-week break before we have to resume things.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for listening as always, and I'm sure we'll be catching you guys here soon.
Alrighty. Bye. And sopa. Got a little cooler with assorted waters and sodas. Cinnamon sugar coated, mild out of the odor. Makes me the envy of the line. If not the enemy, not my energy, I'll be spending plenty of time inside the books that I bought. Got audios and regulars. Quite the party goer and reveler.
So, on today's to-do list is to design a pair of running shoes.